I can't believe that another day has started and it's another sunny day in beautiful Oshkosh.
Ah, beautiful Oshkosh. Nobody appreciates this weather more than people from the deep south who come up here in the summertime. I just gotta say it.
Listen, I think it's an appropriate segue because we have a man from the south joining us this morning from the great state of South Carolina.
Yes.
We're really pleased to have the chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board, Robert L. Sumwalt, with us. And for people that might not know, Robert's a former airline pilot. He retired from U.S. Airways and did some corporate flight department work, and also just happened to end up on the NTSB board. Robert, thank you for joining us this morning.
Rob, Amy, it is wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I think that it's the first time I think we were chatting that NTSB has been here sort of en masse at AirVenture. So tell us a little bit about that forum that that went on yesterday and what you guys were talking about.
Well, you're right. We do have a number of NTSB employees, mostly investigators here. And yesterday we held a roadshow, as we call it, on loss of control. It was keynoted by Patty Wagstaff.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it was great to have Patty here to talk about loss of control and the importance of it. As you know, about half of the GA fatalities these days are due to, in some form or fashion, to loss of control. So we've really tried to put the spotlight on that. And, you know, we had a number of people show up. We had a roundtable discussion with several experts in this area. We had case studies from our actual investigators dealing with professionalism, dealing with aeromedical and physiological issues, and hypoxia. So it was a really good morning yesterday.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, when I wrote up something this morning in Flying Z e-newsletter about Patty Wagstaff's keynote, and I thought she left us at the end of the session with a really interesting thought or two, because Patty's obviously very focused on upset recovery training and aerobatics as, you know, honing those stick and rudder skills that pilots have been losing. And she said, who would you rather fly with? A 500-hour pilot who has been through aerobatic and upset recovery training and has really great stick and rudder skills, or a 10,000-hour pilot who knows that they're scared to death of exceeding any portion of the normal flight envelope? And then she just ended, and I went, oh, I love that quote.
It certainly resonated with me as well, and I thought a lot more about that throughout the afternoon yesterday. I was one of those 10,000-hour pilots that had never been upside down, yet I was flying passengers in the back of a 737 or Airbus or something, so I did eventually do some upset recovery training, but it's amazing what people are able to do these days without upset recovery or aerobatic training.
Oh, it is. It's very, very eye-opening. And, of course, the Part 121 carriers are going to require upset UPRT training next year. But, of course, that's still going to be done in a simulator. So, I mean, but it is certainly better than not having taken any at all. But I don't know. Amy, have you done any upset prevention?
I have, and I have diagnosed other people's issues. Biennials is a place where I often discover that people haven't had a proper checkout or transition training in their airplane. And they do interesting things like spin you out of slow flight.
Unintentionally.
Once or twice. With flaps, by the way, most of the time you have to retract the flaps before the airplane will recover. So the good news is that happened to me the very first time as a very novice instructor. And so I learned early on, altitude is your friend. Even on a BFR with a pilot you think is experienced who has been flying his or her airplane a very long time.
Altitude is your friend, and airspeed is your friend, too.
Airspeed is your friend, too. Although, I'm not afraid, because I've had upset training, and I took a course with Rich Stoll, oh my gosh, in the 80s. And It's one of the few times I've been ill in an airplane, by the way. God bless you, Rich. You didn't do it on purpose. It was really my fault. But because I had that training, I really was comfortable to take that. Now you're my student. We're no longer doing a biennial. Back up. We got to do this again. Let's feel it out. Let's figure out what the problem is. Now, my diagnosis after it, I'm not going to solve all your problems, but I am going to send you to an expert like Rich or Patty or, you know, and get that training. I can't tell you how many times I've had to say that.
Well, you know, I saw something in your bio, Robert, that said that you're a fierce supporter of aviation and transportation safety, really. What do you think you're doing differently as chairman than from what perhaps some of your predecessors have done?
Well, it's a great question, and hopefully not doing a lot differently than my predecessors, because they were out there doing a great job advocating. As you know, Rob, we are a multimodal agency. We deal with all modes of transportation. And so I think as a board member, in fact, when I was confirmed by the Senate 12 years ago, I made the commitment that although I come from an aviation background, I'm not going to just limit my area of interest to aviation. And so I have tried to really get out there and advocate for improved transportation safety in all modes.
And when we talk about, of course, we're here talking about aviation, but what kinds of things did you take away from the roadshow yesterday that kind of gave you an idea of where the industry is trying to support you in this move to improve safety?
Well, as you know, there is a lot of efforts. There are a lot of efforts out there from a lot of different organizations, the FAA, EAA, NBAA, and GAMA, AOPA, an industry-wide effort to put the focus on loss of control and look at various ways that we can mitigate that problem. And one of the technologies that seems to be very promising is angle of attack indications in the cockpit. So it is a multidisciplinary approach that the industry is taking.
Wow. So now, when you first started, and where did you learn to fly? I don't remember.
Rob, I always say I got into aviation by accident. There was a plane crash out at my local airport in Columbia, South Carolina, in January. Actually, it was December of 73. I was 17 years old and thought, well, that'd be cool. I'm going to go see where a plane crashed, and showed up there, followed the coroner in. I told myself, just act like you know what you're doing. Coroner, they raised the tape for the coroner. He ducked in, and I ducked in right behind him. So there I was on the scene of a fatal aviation accident. It was a King Air. So a few weeks later, I took a friend by to show him where the plane had crashed. And this is the part that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but if you're 17, maybe it does. On the way home from seeing where the plane had crashed, naturally, we drive by the airport and sign up for flying lessons. So, yes, I did get into aviation by accident.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a very unusual story. I have to admit, I have never heard that story before.
I am an unusual individual.
But I believe that.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I was going to ask you what you think makes for a good accident investigator, I mean, from your experience.
Great question. I've been following NTSB accidents for a long time, beginning in college when I would read accident reports instead of studying calculus or whatever else I was supposed to be studying. I believe that probably one of the most important traits of an accident investigator is to be able to have an open mind, and it's easy to latch on to a particular theory and go with that, sort of get a confirmation bias. It's important to be able to just slow down and try and take it all in and do a very careful analysis to make sure that the facts are supporting the analysis and the analysis is supporting the probable cause.
A sense of curiosity is important, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that, I mean, in another life, I always saw myself as a NTSB guy. But, you know, that's another story.
I'll tell you what, I just love the detail that you have to go into and the real forensics behind it, because sometimes you don't have a lot to work with.
Well, that's right. And I tell you, I don't consider myself to be a real accident investigator. I'm sort of a wannabe. You know, I go to the accidents and I do the press briefings and things like that, and then ultimately they come to us as a board to vote on after I've carefully studied everything. But I'm just a wannabe.
Tell us where the rest of the wannabes of the world can find information about NTSB, both online, and I know you've got a big presence here at the show.
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that question, because I did want to put a plug in, because while we're at the show, we have a booth. NTSB has a booth in the Federal Pavilion. Our real accident investigators are there. They would love to come have people come by and chat with them.
Oh, fantastic. That's that would great. Be great. And then online, you're ntsb.gov.
That's right, ntsb.gov. Right?
Excellent. And I know you've got a bunch of safety briefings up, and people can take a look, and there's pictures and a lot of detail there. So it's a good place to start when they're curious.
We have wonderful people at the NTSB, and I'd love for people to come by and have a chance to meet with them.
Well, Robert Sumwalt, thank you for taking the time to come by EAA Radio today and share your story with us.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Rob. It's great to be here.